Have to put up with it again, but you do, and the reason you do is because we're here, you're there, there's this electronic connection between all of us here, so, you know, moms and dads, boys and girls, children, ships at sea and ships on the rock, it's another Fish and Frank's thing here. Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and we're going to do kind of what's up for this week. Fishing-wise, and on the big WKDW 97.5 FM Real Community Radio broadcasting out of Northport, and you can get us from Charlotte Harbor all the way up to Venice, out to Englewood, and to all our friends, farmers, and agricultural interest around the state. And for those of you clicking into the Listen Now button on KDWRadio.com, you know, thanks for listening. Robert, you here?
Yes, I am.
You're here. Okay.
Yes.
What? I guess we're going to have to get down to it and figure out what's going on with the fishing in the area. We got a full moon coming up this weekend?
Yeah, actually, tomorrow night is the full moon coming in after this really pretty major cold front. And it dropped the temperatures down just a little bit water temperature-wise, but a whole lot air temperature for a lot of people.
Well, water does it. If it gets cold, it's got to stay cold for 4 days before it really starts affecting the water temperature below, say, a foot. To get down to 6 feet and change the temperature, it's almost a two-week thing to get the water temperature to change past 6 feet.
Yeah.
But, and the thing is, it gets cold at night, but during the day you got that sunshine popping on it. And
exactly.
The sunshine, you got 12 hours a day where it's bright and sunny and the water warms up, and then it tries to cool it back down overnight. Now, the wind makes a big difference stirring the water up.
Yeah, the wind can definitely create a temperature drop, you know, because it's just catching the air and pushing it down lower into the water column. But it's usually got to be pretty exceptionally windy to do that.
Yeah, I usually figure for freshwater, it's about a four-day event before it starts dropping the water temp. But luckily, we've had more than 4 days of chilly weather, and that has brought the bass fishing on like crazy lately. People are going out bass fishing all over Charlotte County, Sarasota County. I mean, bass are on fire right now.
Yeah. I mean, I've had reports from as far as Lake Manatee right now. So the guys are catching bass on mostly shiners. Seems to be the productive one for everybody all around. But we've had quite a few guys coming in and buying the creature baits, some of the plastic worms. Even had a couple of guys buy some spider jigs this week that have been doing well on those. It seems like a little bit slower presentation seems to be the
Now, are they fishing
animal.
Them deeper? Or are they
They're fishing them in shallow water and a little bit deeper. They're kind of all over the map on that one.
But mostly down towards the bottom?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of guys were buying spinnerbaits the last couple of weeks, but that seems to have slowed down this week.
Yeah, spinnerbait fishing is nice when you've got some water in the middle of the day. If you're going to go out mid-afternoon, you might want to take a spinnerbait with you. As I said last week, I'm still going to go with the Willow Blades, double willow. Lead one, gold, and following one, larger one, is silver would be mine, and probably the chartreuse and white. But freshwater fishing as a whole has been getting a lot better lately. The crappie fishing, now we should save this towards the end because everybody wants to know about the crappie. You know, you've got a better chance of getting up with somebody's spouse than you do getting to where they fish crappies from.
As far as spots go, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
they're extremely tight-lipped.
You know, the crappie fisherman's more likely to say, no, you can have my spouse. I ain't telling you where I'm catching crappie.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, that's like the best-kept secret in the world. But in the Port Charlotte canals, what you're looking for is pepper trees overhanging the water, same up in Northport. Have you heard anything about spillway activity?
Some of the spillways have been picking up a little bit, but most of the spillways have been producing the tilapia, the Mayan cichlids, and bluegill. It seems like the crappie are out just a little bit farther away from the spillways of the culverts fishing around those pepper trees like you're talking about.
Yeah, the pepper trees have so much branch and root entanglement under the water. If you can find a deep edge and a big pepper tree sticking over it, chances are there's going to be crappie there. I'd test it out just simply with a minnow and a bobber to see what, you know, guess what was going to happen at that spot.
Yeah, and that's what most of the guys have been doing, is they've actually been going out, and the crappie minnows, a lot of times it can go both ways. Some of the guys just use strictly the crappie minnows, but some guys like to use those for their search and find kind of bait. And then when they dial in on them, then they'll switch over to like little beetle spins or little grub tails and just start working.
Yeah, those. Like the little marabou hairs.
Yeah, some guys seem to switch it the other way. They use the little beetle spins and the marabous to find them, and then they sit there and whack them with the minnows. But
yeah, I don't know why, but crappie fishing is one of the few where they actually search with live bait and then fish with artificials, where pretty much every other type of fishing on the planet, we search with artificials and then go after them for more things with the live bait.
Yeah, yeah. And they aren't balled up super, super tight yet. The guys are catching 4 or 5 in one spot, then 2 or 3 in another little spot, and then a couple guys have gotten lucky and hit a dozen or so in one particular spot. But they're nicer fish. They've been catching them in the 10 to 12-inch range, with a few in that 8-inch size, but the big, big ones really haven't started to chew yet, like those 13, 14-inchers that guys get really excited about.
Well, crappie fishing is such an amazing thing, or speckled perch, or crappie, or I mean, they just go by so many different names depending upon where you are in the country and where you came from, because there's a lot of local names for them. I grew up Midwest, so I'm crappie fisherman, you know.
That's what I've always called them, is crappie.
But down here, I think it's speckled perch, right?
Yes. Okay. Specks or speckled perch.
And now, the bycatch nowadays is getting pretty unbelievable for as far as how many non-native species we're seeing. We've got Paku piranhas here. Now, when we say piranha, keep in mind the only time any human was ever eaten and destroyed and had their bones picked clean from a piranha was in a movie. It's never happened anywhere in the world outside of Hollywood.
Yeah,
as far as I know, there's never been a report of piranhas, you know.
Lots of mythology, but mostly it's just...
I mean, it sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually the bodies, usually it's a person who's deceased in the Amazon that have been chewed on, but never totally bones.
Right. They will bite, but let's face it, if you're sitting there and you let them bite you until you can't get any more, your fault.
Right. And a Paku, the Paku is just a very close relative of the piranha.
Yeah.
And we talk about it like that because they actually start off as vegetarians, and they look very, very similar to a piranha, except for as they mature, they do become omnivorous, where they eat both meat and vegetation.
And so they do hit readily on minnows and stuff once they get a little bit bigger, and they eat beetle spins, anything a crappie would eat, they would probably take.
Yeah.
Until they get up really big, and then, some of them I've seen have been 20-some-odd inches, they're big fish.
The world record actually comes from Florida, and it's like 51 pounds.
Yeah, so...
I mean, they get really, really big versus the biggest black piranha, I think it's the largest species. They only get like 10.
Yeah. So it can be a very big fish, but they got very blunted teeth. They do have teeth, but very cool. The only thing is they don't take cold well. This is about the north end of their range. You can find them down in Miami and around in those areas much more. But here, the Mayan cichlids and the tilapia don't seem to mind the cold weather.
No, they
and they don't seem to mind the salt. They don't seem to mind anything.
No, they tend to be in just about every body of water there is, whether it's stagnant, good flowing water, salt water, fresh water. You can find them just about anywhere.
Yeah, if it's full-blown salt, they're going to have a problem. But any light dilution of the salt with runoff from a canal or a river or whatever, and they just thrive.
Yeah.
I mean, there's hundreds of them behind my house. I was shocked. I was out there looking and watched a school of fish come through. It was Mayan cichlids. I had a bunch of tilapia a couple years ago, but they've been pretty much pushed out by the Mayans.
Yeah, depending on which body of water you're in. The Mayan cichlids seem to be a little bit more of a roamer as far as what I've observed. versus the tilapia tend to kind of stick in one little area is each individual animal. You know, the little ones tend to school up, but as the tilapia get bigger, they tend to be singles or doubles, and they like to hang in a little area.
Now, a common myth on tilapia is that they only eat vegetables.
Correct.
They eat meat, they eat bugs, they eat worms, they eat fish. They literally, if it gets in front of them, they're going to, and they feel like it, they're going to eat it.
Right. Yeah, they primarily prefer vegetation, but they are very much an omnivorous fish. They will take anything
so
that comes in front.
So you're telling me I should go in and take a bit of lettuce and some broccoli, put it on a hook?
It's worth a try if you can't get them to hit the other alternatives.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, I'm going to bust his chops big time on this one. And he, like, takes it serious and all. I mean,
well, I've heard of guys using peas, and I've heard of guys using corn and with very minimal success. But it
you know
seems
what I like
more of them are caught on worms and minnows.
I like the doughball baits, the Berkeley baits.
Uh-huh.
Same as used for trout fishing. And that seems to work pretty good on the tilapia. Now, Mayan cichlids, a little bit smaller full size than the tilapia are, but
correct,
very tasty.
Extremely tasty. And, when, you know, because they are not native species, there isn't a size limit or a bag limit on tilapia or Mayan cichlids.
Yeah, you can catch what you want, keep what you want.
They actually suggest that you keep them or at least, kill them.
I'm not going along with it.
I don't agree with it either, but I'm just saying it's...
I know they're non-native, they're not supposed to be here, but everything's eating them nowadays. I mean, one of the main things that everybody... we had that freeze back a few years ago, that hard freeze, and that wiped the armored catfish way back, knocked them way back. And
yeah,
now, those, I can see killing everyone I catch with the armored catfish because they're pretty much useless except the snook and the tarpon and everything else has learned to eat them.
Yeah.
I wonder, have they learned to eat the Mayan cichlids yet?
Absolutely.
They're eating Mayan cichlids?
Oh, absolutely.
Because they eat tilapia. Tilapia is one of the best snook baits there is, and yes, you can use them for bait. We've been on the phone with FWC. You can use tilapia for bait, live or dead,
right,
if you want to. Non-native, non-regulated species. There's no reason not to. The only thing you cannot do when you're doing tilapia for bait, but I mean, it even falls into bluegills and stuff, you're not allowed to take any fish caught in a freshwater lake or pond and move it to another freshwater lake or pond. Whether using it for bait or not, you cannot transport fish around. That is illegal.
Yeah, you can't transport any of them alive.
But if you catch them there, you're welcome to use them for bait. Now, the tilapia is very similar in looks to the Mayan cichlid. They almost, and I think all of them end up, what's the one in the Keys that I can't, Oscars. They all kind of have that same look. Some of them are colorful. I think the tilapia is the dullest color-wise of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it goes from like a dark grayish blue color to sometimes a very, very light, almost albino-ish looking color, but that's about it.
Isn't it amazing how many hand gestures we use while we're talking on the radio?
Right.
You know, I have a face. I mean, many people have come up to me and said, I have the best face for radio they've ever seen. You know, and let me just inject something here for you. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but I have come to the realization that fishing for me right now, because I went out Sunday with my dad in the last couple of weeks, and I think going fishing right now is all about being humbled. You're not that good. You're nothing special. You're not allowed to have all this stuff happen. I mean, I just cannot tell you when I've had two trips back to back. Now, granted, high wind, tough conditions, all that. I mean, The week before, not this last Sunday, but the week before, I went out, every line tangled at least twice. And they were usually all together, four rods out. Well, went out this week, and I started off, and we did really good. We caught a couple snook right away, and things were going really well. And then we went up to the Shell Creek Dam. Oh, my goodness. I'm telling you, tangled lines, drifting into each other, I have never thrown a rod down into the boat ever before. Now, maybe I'm just getting old. Maybe I'm just getting grouchy. Toss that rod down, hit the deck, and the tip snapped off the darn rod. I'm like, really? That didn't even hit the boat. I mean, I'm standing there, and this I was throwing it, and then four cast out of six, the bail closed while I was casting. Now, it might have been me, but I think it was the rod. I was casting fine all day, and all of a sudden, just click, boom, and we only had two dozen shiners with us. Two dozen. And four of them go flying off. Perfect cast if they would have had a leash on them, but they're just, you know, my hook's 6 feet from the boat. The shiner's way the heck over there. And finally, I ended up, yes, never do this because it's expensive. I have to buy myself a new rod and reel. And I threw it down. The end of it broke off, which is obviously my fault, so I can't warranty it. But what really killed me about it, okay, I got that, and all right, I'm going to replace the rod. It's my fault. I'll buy myself another rod. That's kind of my punishment for being, you know, losing my temper. I mean, I'm well known for being ridiculously, but I've had radiation treatments in my brain. I'm diabetic. I've got all these excuses, right?
At least the legitimate ones, yeah.
Well, they're reasons. They're not excuses. You should never do and be the type of person I am. I can say I have reasons for the way I am. It's no excuse for my behavior, but it's a reason for it. But here I go. I break that rod, and okay, we were down to the last two shiners anyway. I threw one more up, the one Dad had on, and then we went to Sansucci at the trestle, and there was nothing biting. And came home, and the broken rod I put on the tonneau cover on the back of my pickup truck. Pulled the boat up on the trailer, parked it, and left the rod on the back of the pickup on the tonneau cover. Now, here's where it gets, like, really insulting. I mean, this is what I say about being humbled. I forget that I left it up there, so I park the truck and walk away. Now, mind you, I had not latched the back of the tonneau cover down. The wind catches it and flips the whole tonneau cover up over the cab of my truck. The tonneau cover is the thing that goes over the bed. It's a canvas thing, and it folds out three or four times. Well, that flipped up and went over the top of the truck. I go out there the next morning, and I look, and here's the cover on my boat. And, I mean, it's just the whole cover up over the cab, almost hitting the windshield, right? I'm like, oh, goodness, all right. And I put it all down, latch it, making sure everything's right. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I drive off. Go into the store to go to work. Never thinking about what was missing, I put the rod on the tonneau cover. I get home that night, and I said, what happened to that rod? I'm thinking I got this rod, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what did I do with that rod? Oh, the tonneau cover flipped up. I had it laying on the back of the truck. The cover flipped up over the cab. I go looking for it. It flipped in front of the truck. Now, it didn't land, you know, like in line so the wheels would, you know, it would go between the tires. No. The wheel, you can see where I drove off, the wheel rolled over the reel. My wheel rolled over. I say wheel and reel in the same sentence. It's tough. It's double tough. I can't tell you. And I mean, the tire goes right over the reel, and it breaks the other end of the rod, and the reel is crushed into the ground. So when I say,
well, at least you don't have a bail problem anymore.
I have no problem with that rod. The rod gives me no trouble at this point. I almost tried to dig the dirt out of it. Nah, okay. So anyway, the thing was almost brand new. This is $200 we're talking about here, plus line.
Right.
So when I say fishing, and I love to fish, and it's supposed to be relaxing, and I'm just giving you a little insight. When you get out there in the water and you think this happens just to you, No. I'm sorry, but I had to get this off my chest. I was like, really? Okay, so
the good news is your father wasn't there to witness that part of it.
No, he was only there to witness me breaking the rod, first time ever.
Right.
In my entire life, and that's a long time. I used to have my pet dinosaurs. Never mind. All right, back to the thing we were talking about that. Spanish mackerel. I mean, okay, WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM, home of Fish and Frank's Humiliation, and it's real community radio here. We're broadcasting from Northport, and we go all the way down to Charlotte Harbor, maybe even Punta Gorda if you're really lucky, and if you get over to Englewood, out in the agricultural areas, and up in Venice, WKDW and 97.5 FM. Go to kdwradio.com and click the Listen Now button, and you can hear us anywhere in the world. So, Spanish mackerel, Robert. What are we talking about, Spanish mackerel?
Spanish mackerel have been doing actually pretty well. I've been getting a lot of good mixed reports on those out there. Most of them have been in the near passes like Venice, Boca Grande, even Gasparilla Pass, and then all the way up to like 20 miles offshore. The last several days with this front has, well, let's see, Sunday there was 4 to 6 footers out there off the beach. A lot of surfers having a really good time this whole last week.
Right.
It's really murked up the water, so it's very cloudy out there.
Now, you were just out there with Josh Olive, mm-hmm. and what did you guys do?
We actually just kind of played around trolling. He was starting to kind of practice with his boat a little bit, learn his fish finder, but he mostly wanted to learn how to use a planer with a spoon on it or any other lure for that matter.
So what did you put on the planer? What size planer was it?
A number one planer. Number one planer with a small squid spoon.
All yes, right, but that's the number one planer is the smallest one. Then twos, threes, fours is like a poor man downrigger. It's almost impossible to pull with a boat.
Right.
Impossible on a rod and reel. But ones through threes, excuse me, we work on off the boat. Now, you got a number one, which is going to take you down anywhere from 15 to 20 feet. What'd you put off the back of it?
I put I don't remember what size Clark spoon he had. I'm going to guess by the size of it. It was
about
probably either zero or a one.
Have to be a one.
Okay. It was not super tiny.
Now, I go 12 to 15 feet back off a planer.
That's about what we did, was about 12 feet.
And so what'd you catch?
He caught a Spanish mackerel that was probably 17, 18 inches long, which is pretty good size for a Spanish. And then he also caught about a 3-pound jack.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. The birds were all over the place. I mean, we ran out 7 miles out of Gasparilla Pass out to Trembly Reef, trying to see if we'd find a little bit clearer water or maybe some consistency with some bait or whatever, but it seemed like bait was coming up and going down quickly because pelicans were all around searching, and they'd dive occasionally, stay there for a minute, or get right back up. The terns and seagulls were all over the place, and they'd be diving and pop right back up. And then we saw some blitzing fish, but they were peppered, too, all over the place. They'd come up for a minute or two and then be gone again. So I did see a couple fish. One, for sure, I'm 99% was a king mackerel. Several of the other fish looked king mackerel-ish because they were fairly big and silver. And then a spotted eagle ray.
I'm not sure you're not getting into profiling here. You know, we've got to stay up with all the latest PC stuff. Now I'm beginning to think you're profiling. You know, you're talking about it could be a Spanish. What's wrong with a Spanish? Now you're thinking it's all king. What's going on here?
Two different animals. Yeah.
So you're allowed to profile fish.
They were too big. They were too big to be Spanish because they were far enough away where I could see them, so I would say it'd either be a world record Spanish or a king.
All right, I'm going to let you go with that. I'm going to allow you to profile the fish, but just watch yourself because I'm watching.
The bottom has changed out there a little bit. We came across a couple of humps out there that I've never seen before between Trembly Reef and Novak Reef. We were in, what was it? I think it was like 29 feet of water or something like that.
Yeah, it's about 29 to 33.
And there was a ridge that came up 5 feet hump.
Now that's straight off Gasparilla Pass, right?
Yeah, we were actually, because we were coming from Trembly, which is just a bit north of the pass.
Right.
So we were quartering right towards Gasparilla, or towards Novak Reef. There was a 5-foot hump that came up.
I'm still going down to the theory that we got hit with the trifecta. Hurricanes don't blow up the bottom of the Gulf, not in 30 feet of water. Charlie didn't do anything to it. Remember back in 2005, there had to be Katrina, Rita, Ivan? There was all kinds of them that went up in the Gulf, and the bottom didn't change at all.
I was still dazed from Charlie, so I don't remember all their names.
But, I mean, all these ones, Otis, something like that was one of them, I can't remember, but these major storms going up through the Gulf, the bottom did not change. The reason the bottom changed after Irma was all the rivers were anywhere from 8 to 12 feet flood stage, over normal, 8 to 12 feet up, over normal. And
well, that's Peace River was at 19. 2 weeks before that, we had anywhere from 18 to 24 inches of rain.
Right. So the Peace River was at like 19 foot, 11 is flood stage. It was 8 feet over flood stage and on Shell Creek, Prairie Creek. The Myakka River was 10 feet over flood stage. All these rivers were going down and all flooding to try and get out into the harbor. Irma hit, and that wind blew all that water out of Charlotte Harbor, 5-6 feet from good estimate.
Absolutely.
So you had all the flood stages from the rivers and the creeks, plus the half the body of Charlotte Harbor blown out all at the same time.
Yeah.
That is producing a fire hose of pressure. That's a pressure sprayer going out.
Yeah.
And that would have moved the bottom out there even several miles out. And
oh, absolutely.
This is the only thing I could think of, because hurricane wouldn't do it, river flooding doesn't do it, but when you combine the two together, that's what did it. There was so much water moving out of everywhere, plus all the flooding from the rivers and everything, it was a massive body of water. But anyway, getting back, tarpon seems to be, we thought it was kind of over for a while, but tarpon's back on the swing now, right? They've got another hit. They're coming up. It's going to be a big one. Now with their next latest and greatest hit, tarpon fishing in Charlotte Harbor. What's going on?
Usually the big tarpon don't leave until about our second good cold front. They just tend to thin out a little bit more. You'll have some of the bigger fish that are residents that actually move up into the Peace River and Myakka River. And then the majority of them head down closer to the passes and the beaches and mostly right along the intercoastal. Your juveniles, of course, stay here, and they're up in the canal systems is where they really prefer, because they can get in that little deeper water where the water temperature stays more consistent. This past week, I've heard of just great numbers of tarpon, baby tarpon, moving up into the PGI and Port Charlotte canals. They're always there, but this last week seems like a lot more people
now,
are talking
about. Now, if they were always there, why were you just saying there was no tarpon there? Last week you said, no, they're just not here.
Because
and now you're saying they're always here? Now, you're going to have to really get more on the ball than this. I'm watching. This is, big brother watching you. I mean, there is correction here. So now, which one is it?
They weren't cooperating at all last week that people were talking about. It seems like
so they weren't cooperating or they weren't there?
One of the two. I wasn't hearing as many reports.
Talk about non-committal. You could be a politician, my friend.
Probably.
Yeah. You need to run for Senate.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the perfect political response.
No.
All right. So anyway, a lot of tarpon back up in the canals. Would you say more in Port Charlotte or more in PGI?
Honestly, I'm getting about a 50-50 on them.
Again, you hear what I'm saying? I'm telling you right now, this guy needs to run for public office. All right, let's go to Cape Coral.
The
Cape Coral Canal.
Same thing. They're getting more fish moving in.
I rest my case.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Keep up.
The weird part about the PGI canals, which usually they have like three or four major haunts where you can almost always find them. Guys are not talking about them in the... Yeah, we'll stick with the Halloween theme. They're not finding them inside Bass Inlet the way they normally do, the Turnaround Basin, and even up inside Ponce de Leon in that lake where it opens up straight in from Ponce.
So what do you think? You think he's actually going to tell us where they are?
They're just scattered. You just got to look for them, literally.
Okay. How about Port Charlotte? Is it the same as PGI?
No, actually PGI or Port Charlotte seems to be a little bit more on the consistent side. East Spring Lake is by far the number one place going
I'm
on.
I'm feeling more consistent. Good fiber diet. I'm right there, right on
That's
the
That's too much information for us.
Okay. Never mind.
We're talking about fishing.
All right. I get confused. It's the radiation.
Starting to hear some of them moving up into like the Pelham Waterway where they usually go into this time of year, and even back in the Manchester and the Ackerman Waterway. Starting to hear a lot more reports of the little guys in there. The cool part is the majority of them that I'm hearing about are in that 15 to 25 pound range rather than that 5 to 25 pound range.
Those are some fun ones.
Yeah.
That's real
they're,
fun.
They're good, decent size for juniors.
I'm going to say DOA terrorize quarter ounce or tiny rattle traps, mm-hmm. or what's your best bet?
I like the Terror Eyes, but I also like the Storm Wild Eyes and the 2 or 3 inch swim bait.
I would say the smaller one, the tiniest Storm Wild Eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be what Austin does. I mean, he really wails them on those things. And they look so tiny. You're thinking brook trout, not tarpon.
Right.
But that's what works. If you get any bigger than a 2 to 2.5 inch bait, you're not going to catch one, ever.
No.
You know, you might get one, but, you know, we all have one of those in the family that just ain't quite right, you know, and that's the one that'll probably hit that, but you're going to be waiting all day to find that one.
Yeah, that's true. You know, a couple guys have hooked a couple while they're trolling, working their way out, you know, on Storm Twitch 6. And another guy was trolling the number 10 Rapala X-Rap.
Oh, the XR-10.
He was
OG.
No, he was actually using that, the ugly yellow one.
Oh, OG. He wasn't using the OG.
No.
Okay.
No, it was the ugly yellow one because he bought a couple of them. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but
it's funny. I've used yellow spoons and yellow stuff, but I almost never throw a yellow Rapala.
No.
I've thrown it a couple times
over the years, but
I throw that bomber, the yellow bomber for tarpon.
I throw the yellow bomber, and I got no problem with it. I try it with the Rapala. I don't do any good on it, so my confidence isn't there with it, so I don't waste a lot of time with it.
All right, but I don't know what's going on with it. let's see. Okay, WKDW 97.5 FM radio, real community radio. Yes, it is. And it's a lot of fun up here. You guys, if you're driving through Northport, you know, check it out. They got the Common Green, I think, is the room next door. And, you know, just stop into the building, say hi. It's nice folks here. They got a open mic jam session on Wednesday nights and all kinds of cool stuff. This is actually radio for the community. And if you want to keep it on the air, go on to kdwradio.com and click the donate button and, you know, donate a couple of bucks or whatever, you know. It's
worthwhile, absolutely.
And nice folks, and I like the programming because you never know what you're going to hear next. This is absolutely awesome radio station. All right. I mean, they do, you know, have us here, so not everybody's perfect, but, you know, they're as good as they can be with that.
Now, one thing I'd like to talk about is because we're talking about so many different areas, and I know we got a lot of new listeners to the area. You know, you work on you built the website.
Yeah, I'm the only one allowed to touch it.
Fishandfranks.com has everything on there that we're talking about. Has nothing to do with...
I'm putting up another new page this week. I try and get one or two new pages up.
This week ends tomorrow, and you got yard work to do, so you're not going to do it this week. Don't mislead anybody.
You've
been burning me all day, so I'm going to get you on that one.
I am being fried here. Put to the test. The hot plate is on. My butt is getting cooked. Okay.
The best thing about the website is that we have all these spots on there that we're talking about with maps, listings of the fish. I mean, all this information is on
fishandfranks.com, no G in fishing. I got a question for you.
Sure.
The guy got that big bluefish back in Burnt Store Isles in the canals.
Right.
Right. Now, this was a big bluefish. I mean, close to 40 inches, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's
between 40, 3 and 4.
Still.
Between 3 and 3.5 feet. Big bluefish, gorgeous fish, but skinny, skinny, skinny. Great big giant head, skinny body.
Looked like a bobblehead bluefish.
Yeah, bobblehead bluefish. There's some I could have on my dash. I could have a bobbleheaded bluefish on my dash.
Yeah.
All right. I contend that fish went into Burnt Store Isles and got lost, couldn't find his way out.
Yeah.
And then the feeding, it would be hard for him to find enough food as big as he was to feed and was, you know, getting weaker because he wasn't able to. Because that was right during the time when there was almost no bait in the canals. So,
right.
But if you think about it, we think of getting out of canals pretty easy because we're looking, we go, okay, there's the White House, there's the big tree, all right, that turns right around the corner here. But when you're underwater, the view almost doesn't change.
Right.
You can't look 2 blocks ahead and say, hey, I'm making hand gestures and hitting the lamps and stuff. This is ridiculous. What's wrong with me?
I don't know
what's wrong with me either.
Because your hands are usually typing at the same time as doing this.
Yeah, I know. I'm not typing, so I got to do something. All right. But if you're a fish underwater, it's got to be harder to find your way out of a canal system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how they do it. I mean, the magnetic pole is basically what they use for all
of their... Yeah, but you've seen
their...
some of these canals. It's left turn, right turn, back around, come around. And there's no magnetic pole in the world getting them out of a canal. I think if they... And at Bernstorff Isles, you've got all those canals, and they open up in that one old lock system. They took the locks out, so it's free-flowing. But it's one little opening.
Right.
And by gosh, if you go 30 feet too far, you're looking again. It's like being lost in one of those hedge things, you know?
Yeah, little mouse in a maze.
Yeah, you're in a maze. I mean, you got walls all the way around you, and you have no idea where you're at.
Yeah, I don't know how they find their way in and out of their pyramid.
So I could be right. That fish could have been lost,
absolutely.
And that's why that big blue fish was back there. How he ever found his way back there, coming into the harbor, I get that, you know, up in the Gulf. But one that big, they're usually not down here.
Right. Well, that's the other weird part is that it was such a large fish. I mean, this was basically what most people up in the Northeast would consider an actual decent bluefish, and we consider it a holy wow, that's a giant bluefish.
Yeah, this would be a better than average catch if you're in Jersey.
An average bluefish here is only a pound to 3 pounds. A big bluefish is 5 pounds. You've really started to impress somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of crazy. All right, getting to the snook fishing, I'm going to come back to the snook fishing actually because flounder have been such a big deal. Fish and Franks is a bait and tackle shop in Charlotte Harbor. Fishandfranks.com, no G in fishing, not in a southern version. But there's so many flounder around the area. I went out 2 weeks ago looking for flounder, blanked, and then all of a sudden, within 4 days, they were everywhere. Where are they hitting flounder now?
Still kind of in the same locations. I'm getting some reports up there off of Venice and the jetties. Right along the beach there also. And then the main ones that I've been hearing about have been primarily along the intercoastal from Lemon Bay down into Pine Island. The two biggest places I'm hearing about mostly for our immediate area in Charlotte Harbor has been Cape Hayes, kind of scattered on it, mostly in those couple deeper troughs that you talk about for shortcuts to get across the bar. And then also our shrimper has been talking about the amount of them that the shrimpers have been catching down there in the north end of Pine Island, Boquilla area.
He said they got so many they're just throwing them back now. They're not even bothering to keep any because they've already got what they want.
Yeah.
And they're just loading up in the shrimp nets.
Yeah.
And they're just throwing them back as soon as they get them. Now, the one thing about a shrimper that does bait shrimp, they shrimp very slowly. They pull very, very slow and very, very short periods of time because the object is to get the shrimp alive up onto the boat. So when they catch these fish, they can throw them back in the water alive, very little harm done to them. But whereas eating shrimp, they pull very long. They literally pull till the boat slows down. And they're pulling much faster because everything by law has to go on ice and dead. So they don't care if it's live or dead. So everything comes up on those food shrimp boats, commercial food shrimping, is dead 90-some percent of it. And 90-some percent of everything on a bait boat comes up alive. So
right.
That's a big difference. That's why we're talking about those.
Most of the guys are catching them on shrimp, just slowly jigging them along the bottom. And then they're also using those banana jigs like we talked about for a pompano.
The crazy jigs.
Yeah, and just now, slowly crawling them right along the bottom has been the main thing.
Now, peg leg, we got a guy in the store, and everybody says, why do you call him peg leg? That's rude. I said, well, he's got one leg. He kind of knows that. He didn't wake up in the morning and go, oh, gee, what happened?
Right.
You know,
surprise.
He pretty much knows his leg's gone. But peg leg Steve has a thing where he takes a gulp shrimp, cuts it in half, and puts it together with a couple of those hitchhiker little clip things, and then puts a jig head in it, and it gives it a lot more action. He's been bouncing that on the bottom over there in Cape Hayes, just waylaying the flounder. I mean, made me look really bad.
Yeah, he got his limit between him and his wife. They both got their limit out there doing that.
Yeah, it was 4 days after I was there.
Some of the guys are doing the same thing with just the plain old gulp, working it just standard without adding to it, right over there between...
He's using the,
Molting.
Molting? He was using the new penny for the longest time. He went to molting now?
Yeah, he switched over to molting a few weeks ago.
All right, the one's brown and white, and the other's kind of gray and greens and white. let's see. Let's drop back in with the snook fishing. What's going on with snook fishing?
Snook fishing is starting to get really incredible. A lot of your bigger snook are leaving from off the beaches and somewhat out of the passes, so you're starting to hear more reports of guys running into some bigger fish inside Turtle Bay and Bull Bay, even some bigger fish moving up the east wall and the west wall. So we're starting to get some scattered reports on some what I would consider slot-sized to over-slot-sized fish. Still, obviously, the little ones are dominating the whole area from out on the beaches to the passes.
Now, Danny,
to any nearshore piers.
Danny Latham, he's fishing Matt Lachey, the Indian Fields, Ice House 2, that whole stretch of water from Matt Lachey up to North End Pine Island. He's finding a lot of snook, but not a lot of keeper size.
Yeah, most of them are on that smaller size in that 18 to 24, 25-inch range. They're starting to transition over from white bait, which was still tricky to find anyway a week ago. Now it's even harder. But they're starting to hit the shrimp. They're starting to hit pinfish pretty well. That seems to be the bigger slot size snook that I'm hearing about from people. It's been coming on primarily pinfish and small silver jennies or mahara. and shrimp, obviously.
Now,
in
the
some
white
areas.
Bait is going to catch a lot more snook, but they're... You're going to have a harder time finding your slot fish with it.
Yeah.
If you can find some white bait, and there's been some along the ICW out there from Venice all the way down, but it's hard to find. You got to look for it. But if you're using white bait, you probably will catch a lot more snook. But if you're going to catch fewer snook, going to the pinfish, but they will be noticeably bigger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so. Definitely. You know, white bait's a good search bait, and that's good for catching pups, but to catch a legal snook on white bait, it just doesn't happen that often anymore.
Well, it's kind of like the difference between, you know, I'm painting at the house, and Carl came over, and he just, you know, I had scaffolding set up, and I got scaffolding, plus I got, you know, things set up on top of the scaffolding so I can actually reach it. He just zips up there and does all that. And with me, I got to go look at it, and I'm going to go crawl up there and do it. You know, trying to metaphor something besides the obvious one, where these young guys, they'll just run out there and grab it quick, and us older folks, we're just going to look at it for a minute, consider our options. Okay, do I really want that? You know, what's good? Okay, I look at it. Okay, I'll go over to get it. By then, the young ones have already got it.
Yeah.
You know.
But that comes with age. You're supposed to be smarter than them, so you kind of sit back and just act like you're evaluating it and let them just take care of it.
Yeah, at least make sure when you're doing this, you give that appearance like, you know, like point with the end of your glasses and give thoughtful looks, you know, and we don't have to let them know. We're just too lazy to go over and do it. All right. We're going to get back into this. We're on WKDW 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. Northport, Florida is where we're broadcasting from. Reaching out to the world on KDWRadio.com. So anywhere in the known world and part of the universe, you can tune in that way. All right. Fishandfranks.com is our website. You can go there. There's nothing for sale on it. You can go there, except gift certificates if you want to buy gift certificates. Other than that, it's just... I think 9 gigabytes full of fishing information, spots of where to go fishing and all that. Let me see here. And we're doing Amazon price match on Penn reels and Akuma reels, boys and girls. There's a little hit for you. Yeah, holiday season's coming up. If you didn't want to get all your full warranties and everything else, come down to us. Amazon price match on Penn and Akuma reels. And that's for the reels from Penn and Akuma. All right. Let's see. We talked about the flounder and the snook and all that other kind of stuff. You know, last week I talked a little bit about the fishing licenses.
Yeah.
You know, you had to have them.
Yeah.
And people say, well, why do you have to have a fishing license fishing from in saltwater? Now, you can get a license at no charge. That you can fish off the beaches, piers, docks, anywhere where, if you were to walking from your house to get there, as long as your feet stay dry, you could use that license and no charge.
Correct. If you're a resident.
If you're a Florida resident. Now, you ever heard the expression, Florida? Well, the duh.
It's on the news every night.
Yeah, the duh part comes in. That only in Florida... All you have to do is go down and get a fishing license, and there's no charge to fish from land, but they have exemptions where you don't have to have it. If you're using a hand line, I said, what kind of mental midgets made up exemptions for a free fishing license? Why would we have a fishing license in the first place? Well, that started back in the late 1930s. By the 1940s, we had freshwater fishing licenses. It was to control the resource, limit, and help pay for all the stuff they were doing to the freshwater and controlling the fish, managing breeding stuff and all that.
And just managing the habitat anyway.
Managing the habitat. So since the 1940s, we've had freshwater fishing license here in Florida. But in 1990, they enacted the saltwater fishing license. That was pure greed. There was no reason for it. It hasn't really added much to the... They said they're going to use it for research and officers and all that. But what do you need officers for besides ticket people?
Right.
You know what I mean? When you think about it. So they enacted the saltwater fishing license. And at the time, the only time you needed to buy or even get a saltwater license is if you were in a boat. And what kind of annoyed me is people that come from the cities and stuff and better off areas, you know, middle class folks and all that and up, they had no idea the reason you did not need a saltwater fishing license fishing from land is people use that for meat protein. That actually was part of the way they fed their family. Catching mullet and different fish from land was part of the food value. Even in 1990, we didn't have like the food stamp programs and all the rest of the stuff they do now. And people actually went out to get meat. Meat's a very important thing. I'm still imbibing nicotine and very occasionally alcohol, but the only person with a more unhealthy lifestyle than me is a vegan. Vegans are the worst. That's the most unhealthy lifestyle you can have. I mean, that's why humans evolved. We eat meat protein, our brains got better, and we went on. And now they're kind of trying to dial back the evolutionary thing. They're going backwards down the scale. But that was why you weren't charged. Remember the old black woman who used to come in? Remember them mullet, the ones who used to catch mullet all the time?
Oh, yeah,
it was
yeah,
right
yeah.
when you started. Yeah. It was just about over then.
Yeah.
They were starting to develop, starting to build up around the area. And a lot of the, in order to catch mullet successfully from land, you've got to be doing it in the same place a lot.
A lot.
And
feeding them on the right time, same time every day, getting them into the routine.
And it's the whole chumming aspect of
yeah.
it. Now, the chum was made of rolled oats, laying mash. Now, laying mash is what you give chickens that are laying eggs. It's the feed for the chickens. You mix the two of them together with a little bit of water, 50-50. Rolled oats is oatmeal, by the way. And made it into kind of a real thick paste. You put a bobber on it, almost what was like a sabiki, except much stronger hooks, forged
yeah.
hooks.
Yeah.
And little number six hooks, put white plastic on there, corn, all kinds of stuff. People had every kind of thing. But you'd have 4 to 6 hooks hanging below a bobber. And then you would take this dough paste of laying mash and rolled oats and throw it at your bobber. And that would hit the water, and mullet go around open and closing their mouth, just kind of swimming. They don't really go, mullet don't kill for a living. That's why they think they're vegetarians, but they're not.
Yes.
Right? They'll eat anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've been known to eat shrimp and greenbacks and other small little critters in the water. It's just not a normal common thing, but
right. They'll eat bugs, they'll eat worms, freshwater mullet and freshwater lakes readily hit red worms, wigglers.
Absolutely.
So mullet are not vegetarians. They just appear that way because they don't kill for a living. But when these women would come in, they were some of the most unbelievable.
Funny.
I'm so happy
she was so
that I got
fun.
To live through that time.
Absolutely.
Because they were some of the most amazing people I ever met and good at what they did, really good. They would go out and catch all these mullet.
Their craft.
Oh, yeah. But what was kind of cool about it is different ones on different days kept the water chumming, kept the mullet eating them, because it's not natural food, so they had to be taught to eat it.
Right.
And once they quit doing it and only went part-time and a little bit here and a little bit there, and most of them were older women, and they've probably passed away by now. I haven't seen.
Yeah.
It's probably been 15 plus years.
Yeah, every bit of that.
But that was some of the most amazing people I ever met, and amazing at the way they caught fish. So
yeah,
anyway.
And it's neat to see those tricks, you know, because those tricks can still be utilized today, even though we don't have lots of public fishing areas from shore. But there's quite a few people that are blessed enough to live on the water itself, so they can actually replicate those same things in their own backyard if they want to take the time to do it. Problem is that most people don't want to take the time to do much anymore.
Well, if you're going to do it and you want to bring fish up to your backyard, now you can use regular dry powder chum, and that works pretty good. But if you go down to a feed store and get the slow sinking mix, or even rolled oats and Lang mash, whatever you want, get a bucket of it, you know, and get quite a bit of it. And then when you have your coffee in the morning or in the evening, but usually most people are around in the morning. When you're drinking your coffee, go out there, take half a Dixie cup, and fill half a Dixie cup with that dry stuff. The semi-floating fish food works really good. And just walk out, toss it on the water, go back inside. And you do this every day. And after about a month, you're going to notice a few fish there. Within 4 to 6 months, there's going to be a lot of fish there. I put a feeder in because there was no way with my schedule I could be there at the same time. And just like they use for deer, one of these electric feeders, and it just spits the stuff out. And that's how I figured out the semi-floating stuff worked. When that feeder would go off, the mullet would be in my canal because it went off twice a day. From my house down 3 blocks, solid, the whole top of the canal. Once that feeder went off, you could just watch the fish blow up all the way down the canal. It was absolutely extraordinary. But snook came, tilapia came, all these different fish came to it.
Absolutely.
And we've taught snook to people that get snook from eating out of their fingers.
Yeah, right off of their dock lights.
Now, what you do with that is you get a 5-pound bag, box of sardines, shatter them. You take one sardine out and cut it in about 4 pieces. Walk out to your dock, drop a piece in the water. Yeah, count to 2 or 3, drop another piece in the water, count 2 or 3, until you get each one in the water. And you're going to go out there, and you for a while, you probably see the pieces laying on the bottom. Nothing even bothered them. Then all of a sudden, you're going to start dropping them in and noticing there's no pieces laying there. And then after a while, days or a week or two go by, you'll be dropping them in the water, and you'll see a dark, phew, something dark comes by and grabs them when they hit the water. If you do this every day, within just a few months, all of a sudden you walk out there and these fish will literally be sitting there with their nose out of the water waiting for you to show up. They'll know your footsteps. They won't do it when other people show up, but when you show up, they'll know your footsteps. And that's going to bring us to an amazing point when we get into more of the hardcore snook fishing here in a while. But remember that they can actually learn your footsteps as you walk up. It's pretty cool, you know, when you think about it.
Oh, it's amazing that a fish, well, and because we have such our own little pattern of how we walk, we're going to make a distinct sound, but it lets you realize how precise the hearing is on fish, where they can distinguish you walking up to your dock versus someone else. You know, so that's one of the most amazing things about it.
All right, just to kind of recap all this, in freshwater, bass fishing is hitting really good right now. Mayan cichlids, tilapia, crappie, also doing well in the freshwater. We got Spanish mackerel, a little bit in the harbor, but more in the ICW and right along the beaches, out from 15 feet of water on out. There's also king mackerel there in close enough to get with a small boat. Spanish mackerel probably could be cast for from the beach. Got tarpon going up and down the ICWs. The largest tarpon being caught right now are down by Captiva Rocks down towards Sanibel. A lot of small tarpon, easier to find in Port Charlotte, either Edgewater Lake, East West Spring Lake canals. In PGI, a lot of tarpon, but scattered throughout the canal systems. You got a really strong showing of flounder here in the area. We've got Cape Hayes, the ICW, all the way from Venice up and down, scattered along the beaches. Just a lot of fish. Redfish doing well. A lot of fish being caught in Bull and Turtle Bay right now. A lot of snook. A lot of snook in Bull and Turtle Bay. Some redfish. But Carl was just, I talked to him on the way in, he just lost a big one. They had 2 legal ones in the boat and a ton of trout in Turtle Bay. Quite a few in Bull Bay. But for around the area, that's, you know, anything else you can think of what people need to know for this weekend?
Well, like we talked about with the full moon, you know, just maybe think about maybe just a little bit later start, or at least if you get...
Oh, you mean I get to sleep in?
Yeah.
All right, get this, boys and girls. You can go down and get donuts, have breakfast, and then load the boat.
Right. Take your time going out and just be real observant, but you'll probably notice that the fishing for all the species is going to get a little bit better as the late morning progresses.
Okay, we only got about a minute, so really quickly, why is it better to wait after a full moon?
Because they're up all night. When it's a clear sky at night, they're up all night still feeding on all the nocturnal critters, the little worms, shrimp, and crabs that are out and about. So they're really full first thing in the morning. As the day progresses, they're starting to get hungry and get more active.
Okay. Our light just went out. Was that a signal? Or is the world ending? Our producer, RJ, over there, I'm asking about the light. He's just looking at me. You're going to be doing music for us to get out, right?
And we're doing...
Sure. What would you like?
This is WKDW, Real Community Radio of Northport. Mm-hmm. And you're listening to us in the surrounding area of Venice, Port Charlotte, Inglewood, and... It's a community radio station just for our community. I mean, feel free to stop in and check out the place. It's pretty awesome. Talk to them. You can even donate to them. They're a nonprofit, and it's kdwradio.com.
97.5 FM. Fish and Frank here, and Robert in a chair across from me, and our producer, RJ, who just sits there and shakes his head at us while we're talking. We're not sure what that's about. But anyway, this has been our second show, and we really appreciate you guys listening. Northport, love you guys. Port Charlotte, hey, homies, you know, I guess, what is it?
Homies, wow.
What is it?
I don't know.
I saw it on TV the other night. You know, I saw somebody
say it.
They
put their scopes on the side of the guns, too.
Okay, yeah, is that what it is? Yeah, they hold their guns sideways. All right. I ain't that young. Anyway, thanks for listening, boys and girls. Bye-bye.
Okay, I got you. Another great show.
That was fun.